So we will now order the regular board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District on March 17th, 2020. You will note, please note that we are operating primarily remotely in response to the executive order with regard to COVID-19. We do have accessibility by the public in a room up here as set up on our agenda. So if anyone appears, we will know that you're here and recognize you. So our first, the board met in closed session and talk about two stipulated student expulsions, two cases of anticipated litigation, and a personnel matter. And we need to take at first of all, is there consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So moving on to our student discipline matters with regard to for Mr. Millar, did you have a question?
No, I was going to move.
So with regard to our first student personnel item, yes, please make a motion.
I would move for student A. I would move the recommendation with a modification to the rehabilitation plan, items 3 and 4, to read modified as required by coronavirus restrictions.
Thank you. We have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Right. Thank you. And then with regard to our second student, Mr. Millar?
I would move the recommendation for student B with the modifications to the rehabilitation plan for items 3 and 4 to read, these requirements will be modified as required by the coronavirus restrictions.
Thank you. We have a second? I'll second. We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by me. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Ms. Dawson, please note that Mr. Unger is not present at this evening's meeting.
Neither is Catherine.
Neither is Catherine at this time. So, did you have that, Andy?
Mm-hmm. I did. Thank you.
All right. So, moving on to correspondence. At the time the agenda was published, no official correspondence had been received. And then, Ms. Dawson, is anyone from the public here?
No, there's not.
Okay, thank you very much. And next we'll move on to 6.01, the business and budget update.
So needless to say, COVID-19 has been just about every waking hour of our existence over the last couple of days. Over the weekend, you know, our staff really stepped up. I'd say BGT staff, instructional staff, our principals, I mean, just everybody, teachers, to make this all kind of come together over the last couple of days. We, kind of some key things that we wanted to make sure just to get that calming effect, you know, for everyone was that just letting everyone know you're getting paid, right? So we're keeping salaries the same. Everything is kind of maintained for us. We are looking at our hourly teachers who turn in timesheets. There's actually some work that we're having them do so that they actually get paid during this time period. These are like our literacy support teachers, you know, people that work at our school sites, you know, in those ways. So they're doing some training during this time. So a great time to kind of keep them active, involved in what we're doing. We did have some, the other kind of portion of our workforce that we are concerned about is our substitutes. So we do have some of our subs, like our custodial subs, our workforce all the time that we're keeping, with our crews working right now at our sites. But there are a lot of substitutes that have no work at this time. That's something Kristen has been working with, Brittany, who's the head of our substitutes, kind of helped him with, getting hooked up with unemployment at this point, and, kind of whatever other assistance we can do to help them, during the time. So those are things that we're trying to do, but really maintain that kind of calmness with most of our employees as we ask them to kind of proceed and to move on during this time. So the only other thing I think for business and budget that we are definitely focused on right now is just the economy. And what is happening right now is going to mean to us a year from now. But that is something that I think we're beginning to have those conversations already in cabinet. Eric and I, Kim, in terms of our planning, our current budget that we're about to move forward on, what is this going to do to property values? What is this doing to PG&E stock? These are definitely things that we need to be cognizant of now, right, and make plans now for what can happen in the future. So we will be taking all of this in mind, right, as we put this budget in our LCAP and as we move forward. So I just want the board to know that we're considering these items, as we move forward.
All right. Next.
Mark has
it. Oh, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I just saw this resolute. Was this on the agenda earlier? The resolute report?
We're going to talk about that, Mark, at the COVID-19 update.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thanks.
So there's more to come on that.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Educate. Educational services update.
Yeah, to echo a lot of what Ryan said, we would be incredibly impressed with every department that people have really stepped up. So as you saw on Friday Focus, we've started this planning for a while, and a lot of people put a lot of thought into it. And then, things really stepped up Thursday, Friday, and this weekend. But Human Resources has gone out of their way to look for ways to support people and be clear and supportive to all the different groups, as well as Student Services. Really, Diane and Joyce have been diving into what could the impact be, having individual conversations and specific letters to special education students, looking also at creating counseling plans and being a supportive a system for students, even through an online format. IS&T, as you can imagine, they have just absolutely transformed their work and have been willing to be flexible and to change so that we could transform, 7,500 kids onto an online platform. They've worked incredibly to disinfect devices and to get Chromebooks as well as MiFi hotspots to families demonstrating a need and showing that they need it. The interesting thing is we're seeing a much larger request for MiFi hotspots. We're wondering if it's because a lot of people are working from home as well, right? It became a really different environment. So, at a lot of our school sites, as Ryan mentioned, food services has been incredible. So you would have been amazed at all the positive feedback that we've heard from Monday's in-person event that took place, so that people could come together, of course, with their safe social distancing, come together, but to kind of brainstorm ideas and to get together to say, hey, what is this new environment going to look like? And to kind of, raise questions and answer things and to help one another with different tech needs. People put together incredibly supportive resources. Who put together a lot of deep thought into what could these resources and services. So I want you to know that that people have stepped up, right? People have really stepped up at school sites, and principals and teachers have really taken this innovative, hopeful, we can do this, we've got this for kids type of mentality. So a lot of positive things happening, and we're having a lot of ongoing daily cabinet meetings in order to keep navigating the ongoing landscape in front of us. So really positive, great things happening. We have an incredible staff that's stepping up to the plate.
Thank you. I would like to note that Dr. Eisenrath Rogers is now here. Apparently she could hear us and see us, but we could not see her. So welcome.
All right.
I left the meeting for a few minutes somehow beyond my control. So sorry.
You'll need to unmute.
Mr. Muller. You can't hear me now?
I just wanted to say I went by C.L. Smith just around lunchtime today, a little before. They had folks out on the through the driveway handing out Chromebooks, not handing them out, providing them to children who needed them. And also, I think they were doing Wi-Fis. And, hello?
No, you're good.
And then I went over to Laguna Middle School in the meal distribution.
You're making a lot of noise there, but we can, yeah. Walt is trying to talk.
That's because I unmuted my sound. Sorry.
Okay. So it was going well at Laguna Middle School. They'd done about 105 lunches when I was there, probably about 12:30. Everybody was very cheerful, and it kind of felt really good. My two cents.
Thank you.
Yeah, we served 640 meals the first day. Of breakfast and lunch, so really 1,280 the first day. And then that more than doubled the second day. So we were at 1,350 students today who received both lunch and breakfast for tomorrow. So 2,700 meals went out today. So I expect that number to continue to grow. At our 10, we have 10 sites set up. We do have kind of an emergency list that we're putting together of people that have transportation issues to get lunches, that we're working on. That's one that we have to be a little cautious about, you know, kind of opening it up to anybody to get food at their home, like for us to deliver it type of thing. So there's a balance right now of us trying to, you know, kind of, again, just get this initial phase set up, and then we can see how we can expand and grow. We do have a handful of families that we are delivering to currently that we're working with student services on a plan for those families.
Mr. Buckland?
Yes, thanks. Can you give us some idea of how many lunches we normally serve in a day?
I can't. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Frank? Well, I went by Baywood yesterday, and, you know, with the rain, I saw the tent set up, and I kind of went later, and it seemed like the rush had already gone by. Today, I drove by again, and there was a lot of families walking. Smiles. The other thing I want to shout out to Ms. Stevens and notably, I think it was Miss Faye was out there helping pass out lunches, and kids were really excited to see, you know, familiar faces kind of, you know, as they were getting their food. And then I went by Loam's just to kind of see. I do have one question, and I don't know if, you know, some of those parents, you know, are coming from a particular area. But is there a reason, when I was thinking about logistics, you know, we have Laguna Middle School and Baywood are sort of close together. Is there a reason why Loam's was chosen and not Monarch? Because that's more walking. You guys know.
With all of the things we're doing, there's federal law jurisdictions, things that we have to follow. So not all sites qualify. The program that we set up. So Aaron, you know, tried to establish it at as many sites as possible, in terms of locations wise. But, I can ask her about Monarch in particular, but I know Baywood in particular had over 200 families today.
Right.
That went to Baywood. So they're going to, again, every day they're adjusting. Yeah. Every day they're seeing kind of how many lunches are served, what we need to do, how do we need to grow it. But I'll ask her about Monarch in particular.
Yeah, no, it was more of kind of the proximity of Los Osos Middle School to kind of Baywood. Those are closer versus it's not a quiz. I just, you know, it was just a question. That's all.
I get it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know that when we were planning, Erin, of course, as y'all know, was amazing, but she was talking about she had to ask for a federal waiver to be able to serve at those sites. And so it's typically the smallest schools and the schools with our highest poverty are the only ones eligible. So she's not able to as Ryan mentioned, serve at the other sites. She has the maximum number, and she had even asked for a waiver to serve at those.
Okay, thank you.
This Measure D update.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting dynamics, right? We'll talk about the bid with the agenda item for the 100 building, but just, you know, Measure D is, we're moving forward. Construction's still happening, still moving forward. Actually got something from DWK that government projects such as the school construction are, they actually consider those essential projects that continue on even during, you know, shutdowns or things like we're dealing with currently. So, you know, we'll continue to be in contact with our, you know, with ACME, with our contractors, and, you know, if they're having issues or what's happening with them, right? But it actually, with the kids and the teachers gone, are actually able to kind of move forward with some of the library move, the slow high, and the classroom moves, and pushing PD over and doing some of the things that we had to wait to do. So we're actually jumping on those now, so that should we have school come back into session this spring, we're ready to roll when they come back. So, it, you know, from that standpoint, it's actually a little bit easier in some ways.
Next is 7.1, the second interim report as of 1/31/20.
Yeah, so I'm going to, Mandy, if you can pull up on the screen the presentation, PDF presentation.
Okay, just bear with me one moment here.
Are you okay?
No.
And then I'll walk the board through the presentation that Julie put together for us.
Thank you.
As Mandy does that, I'll go ahead and just give you a general rundown in terms of first interim, second interim. So from a financial standpoint, we actually look better second interim compared to first interim. That I'll review in a minute with you. Some of the key things that, reasons for that, special education, funds that came from preschool put into this budget as revenues, some other CTE dollars were put in as revenues, and that helped our bottom line. There was one thing that kind of was a surprise to us, and that was SB 75. Which was a new law that came out, and actually we had a hard time even getting school services and SF Squared to kind of let us know about it. And that basically was that we, like Bellevue Santa Fe, where we have to pay for those students, we have to give money to Bellevue Santa Fe out of our property tax dollars, LCFF dollars, the state-funded charter schools, in particular Olive Grove Charter School, has kids from our school district that go to them, that go to their schools, that we also have to pay for, LCFF. So it was trailer language in SB 75, and that represented about a $350,000 cost to our school district. That, again, nobody knew about, nobody's talked about until it showed up on our apportionment. At second interim.
Right.
So, you know, and that was when we got our P1 attendance data, basically. So
can you see the screen?
I can see the screen now. So if you'll pull up the actual, the presentation PDF.
Where are we? Okay. Yeah.
So, yes.
Oh, okay.
So just so the board knows, I'm going to have to go through the presentation because Ellen cannot see you now. So what you see right now, the presentation, I'll go through it, and then maybe afterwards, Ellen, if it's okay, then we'll ask questions when everyone gets back up on the screen.
So bear with me, everybody.
So I'm going to go through the presentation, then we'll answer questions afterwards, if that's okay.
Ryan, I'm sorry. Yeah. All I'm seeing is what I had on my screen prior. If you could tell me which item in the agenda.
The PowerPoint.
So we're doing the PowerPoint on the agenda. Or it's PowerPoint or the PDF, so the presentation.
Right.
Second interim presentation. It's one of the bottom.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. So what you'll see, the original balance. So first interim, 16.5, so that was basically what we had in terms of reserves, right? We have our revenues went up $1.3 million from first interim to second interim, that, you know, which we'll talk about. Our estimated expenses also went up during that time period, but the estimated surplus deficit went from a negative $1.2 million down to a negative $500,000. Now again, the first interim and second interim, this is if we spent everything that we budget. We never spend everything that we budget. And that's why the 10-year budget is a much better projection, which currently we expect to have a $1.8 million surplus at the end of this fiscal year.
$1.8 million?
But when we set up our budgets, if we spent everything that we had budgeted this year, we would be at negative 522, right? But that never happens. We never spend everything that we budget. And so that key is good to remember. And again, I'll go over the 10-year budget when we're done. So what you'll see is our estimated general fund ending balance is it remains about $16 million if, again, based on the second interim figures, and this is how the state makes us chart this. So, Mandy, go to the next page. So the second page has some of the general fund highlights. So property taxes are currently estimated at 2.78 higher than what was received in 2018-19. Remember, we had put our projection in our 10-year budget at 3.5%. So, but because of that $2 million loss with PG&E unitary revenue, it dropped from our estimated 3.5 to 2.78. Just in general, the governor's finance officers recommend that we keep about a 17% of our budgeted expenditures in reserve. The board, of course, has our 10% reserve that we try to maintain, right? The current estimate of $16 million ending balance represents 15.2% of the total budgeted expenses in second interim. Of the $16 million ending balance, $616,000 of that is considered restricted. Lottery, Medi-Cal, those types of things. New revenue sources were the $833,000 for special ed preschool intervention, $214,000 for K-12 workforce, $164,000 in billings to other districts, and $58,000 in Ed Foundation innovation grants and miscellaneous adjustments. I talked a little bit about the charter in lieu payments. So because of us having to pay for all of Grove students, that represented a decline in revenue of $350,000. And that is something we're going to have to talk to our high schools about and really our instructional team about whether we want to start our own independent study program. Because right now what's happening is our counselors are referring students to Olive Grove. Because in the past, it had no effect on us. Because if we're going to have to be paying for these students to go to independent charter schools, we may want to look at setting up our own program and doing something that we can attract those students instead of them going to a charter school. So that is to be determined. And then expenditure categories have been adjusted for new grants and other known estimated changes to the budget. So, Matt, if you go to the next page. You'll see overall revenues, property taxes 75%. Again, the state on behalf is that STIRS part that doesn't really count, right? Because the revenues are the same as expenditures. You go to the next, Mandy, page. You see our overall expenditures at this point, our salary and benefit. We're still at 83% of our revenue. Now, what I would tell you is if I took the mitigation funds out, the $4.7 million, we're actually at about an 86% personnel cost at this point. So, you know, I try to, mitigation dollars are one-time dollars that we're using, right? So, and we want to maintain that 85%, but without the mitigation dollars, we're about at 85%. But with the mitigation dollars, we're at 83%. And then overall, what's critical to see is that our employee benefits has risen to 21% of our budget at this time. Mandy, next page. So this is a summary of funds. Again, if we spent every penny that we budgeted. So again, like Fund 21, I'll point out, that's our bond fund. We're probably only going to spend $30 million in bond funds, not $66
million.
So this will change dramatically from now until unaudited actuals, is my point in terms of looking at our general fund and all of our other funds that we have established. So if we go to the next slide, Mandy, which is our 10-year budget, mid-year assumptions in terms of revenue expense. Julie put a couple of kind of key things in terms of looking at our 10-year assumption, and that we have reduced our projection to 3% increase instead of 3.5 in our 10-year budget. And that's mainly because of what's happening with the loss of unitary tax with PG&E. So we change it every time we learn new information. We try to make it as meaningful as possible. One-time revenues have been eliminated in subsequent years. So we have, again, we lose the mitigation funds. We got this extra payment this year. It's less the next 2 years, and then kind of ramps up again before it ends. We do expect the special and preschool revenue to extend next year as well as this year. And we will see that the Coast Cayucas MOU will continue to increase over the next 2 years. From the expense category, salary includes 7 column. We have 2% raises. We do have some retirements. Those are growing. I will let the board know. So we are seeing more retirements over the past couple of weeks. So that will help us in terms of our overall personnel costs. We'll see about this coronavirus and how this affects people and whether we'll see more retirements, but we'll see. Benefits are, projected in terms of STIRS increases and PERS increases over the next couple of years. We do have a smaller increase, in health benefits in 2021 that we anticipate based on what we've heard from CISC. However, that grows to 5% ongoing. And then our contribution to food services is included in subsequent years, but we hope that the governor's budget will help us and provide some relief in terms of school nutrition. Mm-hmm. So, Mandy, go ahead and go to the 10-year budget. And two kind of just key things. One, you'll see the revenue across the bottom, in particular the Davlin Canyon settlement.
Where's that?
This year was $4.7 million. It's at the very bottom, right before total local revenues.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see in 1920, $4.7 million. Next year, that drops significantly, right? To 2.3 million for a couple of years, right? And then goes up to $3 million. And then we have our $4.6 million with ending in 2025. So those are key things that I, of course, am keeping absolutely in my forethought in terms of looking at, that those are one-time dollars that will end. Again, depending on what happens with the economy, what happens with property values, we'll continue to adjust this, monitor it as we move forward, and we see the, potential effects with the economy. And then if you go out to the last page, Manny, really, kind of bottom line, where are we at? So last year, $400,000 at the end of the year. We actually had more than that because we put a substantial amount of money into Fund 40 to help us with maintenance projects, $1.5 million. So we ended up with about $2 million surplus last year. This year we expect it to be about $1.8 million. Honestly, that could rise now if we're not ordering, if we're not paying for things with our current situation. That actually could be more. And then we anticipate a deficit next year, of course, right? Based on losing those extra dollars. And then my hope is that we, with this budget, as well as what we do with next year's budget, we could really take out a chunk of that large deficit that we see in 21-22. So that's something we're going to have to work on this year and next year to try to lower that number, and maintain kind of our fiscal, situation as we move forward. Based on the current budget that you see in front of you, second interim, that we're asking you to approve right now, we do not meet our 10% reserves in year three. Based on what, again, if we spent every penny that we budgeted, And that's how we have to report it to the state, even though we know that's really not going to be the case. Okay, so, you know, we have to put forward our second interim. That's the way, it goes in terms of what we have budgeted. But the 10-year budget for the board is probably a much better financial picture in terms of where we're at as a school district at this point in time.
Okay.
So Mandy, will you get rid of this PDF now and put the board members back up so Ellen can see people and we can answer questions?
And because I couldn't see people during the time and know the order in which people raised their hands, I'm just going to go through the list alphabetically. I'm really trying to be fairer. Mr. Buckman.
Make sure you have sufficient equipment, internet, bandwidth.
Mr. Buckman?
Amy Pratt.
You have a question? You need to unmute. Mark, you're muted.
Hey, that's the first time that ever happened. So Ryan, just three quick questions.
Yes.
Based on the reserves, based on the virus, based on what could ever happen, how many months can we bridge with this set aside reserves? So we have 10% in reserves. How many months can we go? How many years?
So, I mean, in terms of if we had no money or
we start to run out of money, so we can cover payroll for quite a while?
3 months. Normally 3 months with the 10% reserve we have. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. And then you talked about we'd have to report the decline in reserves, but is my understanding wrong? The board has set a 10% reserve, but the state requires a 3%, so why would we report a decline that would be a penalty at all?
No, so it's not a penalty at all.
Okay.
It's in our third year, if you look at our multi-year projection that Julie puts forward, right, which is the actual second interim document with SACS form and those things.
Right.
If you look at that document, you'll see that in year three, we only have a reserve. If we spent every penny that we said that we were going to budget, we would only have a reserve of about $9.6 million.
Right. But okay.
Of course, our expenditures are $105 million. Does not meet the board's dictated 10%. We still meet all state requirements for 3%. Those types of things. But we do, because the board has put this 10% reserve policy. We do put that in our second interim information, and we share that with the county superintendent.
Got it. And then my last question is, how could we get blindsided by the charter support? Is there some place that we look to? And just throwing these things at CSBA, Capital Advisors, who should have caught that?
Listen, SF Squared, Mark, they didn't even tell us about this.
Yeah, okay.
Like, what happens is when we get P1, all right, when we get P1, which is the pupil attendance data,
right?
It shows us how many of our students are at Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School. So that's how Julie knows how much LCFF we have to give to Bellevue Santa Fe. Well, all of a sudden this year at P1, Olive Grove Builton and Olive Grove San Ynez showed up on our P1 data. So Julie was like, what's this? I've never seen this. I reached out to John Gray. I reached out to Michelle Underwood at SF Squared. It wasn't until Eric emailed Michelle Underwood and the head of SF Squared, who's the superintendent at Montecito, that we actually got a response to Michelle Underwood, and they were kind of didn't even know that this was happening. This was like distinct trailer language in SB 75 last year that, again, was never in any updates to anyone. We had absolutely zero idea that this was going to happen until we got that P1 report. CDE, we talked to him about it. And, again, I think we're going to have to really think about having our own independent study program if this is the case.
Yep. Okay. We have all the advisors. We've got the best people.
Yes.
And it was nothing really to do with our staff not knowing about it. Okay. I really appreciate this. And I'm so sorry you got caught with that. Thanks for the answers.
Ms. Brain, did you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Dr. Eisenjazz Rogers?
I'm taking it all in. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Millar? Any questions on this?
No.
Ms. Roger, any questions on the second interim?
Well, I'm just wondering, is Olive Grove taking students that previously would have gone to Templeton. What do you think is going on, Ryan?
You know, I think, you know, I'm not sure. And this is something, again, we're going to have to dig into with our counselors and how they're referring students. But I think Olive Grove is more of a home school, you know, program that probably, you know, it may be a little easier for kids to get into and in terms of doing the work and those types of things. So it's again, it's a situation I'm going to have, Kim is going to have to kind of dig in with instructional services and find out, like, who are these kids and who's going there, and talk to our counselors and find out why, you know, why this is happening.
So if we could determine how many of our kids are being lost to independent study elsewhere, we would then have to figure out where we would site an independent study program.
Yes.
And how we would fund it. And we would want to take out of district students. We'd want to take as many students as we could, correct?
Well, I mean, if we're giving away $350,000, that's, you know, that's four or five teachers that we could have a pretty large independent study program, you know, for those kids. Not to say that we have to have one that big, right? Or, you know, in terms of, should we be referring them to Templeton? Should we, you know, be setting things up? But it just, you know, it's something that begs the question that we need to answer. We need to find this
right. We've been thinking for quite some time that maybe we needed our own program, but it sounds like it's kind of coming to a head now.
Yeah.
Okay. Agreed. Thank you. I don't have any other questions.
This is an action item to move this, to pass this resolution. So, Mr. Millar?
I'll move resolution. Oh, where's the resolution number? Positive certification of adequate funding by the Board of Education.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Ms. Roger. Ms. Dawson, this is a resolution, so we need a roll call vote, please.
All right, Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
You're muted, Catherine.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to undo
that. No, you're fine.
Are we good now? Okay.
Yes. Bye. Okay, I'm going to mute you again now, okay? There we go. Ms. Frame? Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Ms. Roger?
Yes.
Ms. Sheffer? Hello? Ms. Sheffer?
Okay, so this is my item, and getting used to this new normal is going to take a little while, but we'll get there. And I just want to start by saying that how grateful I am to have a school board like you that responded so quickly and so affirmatively on Friday, even in the face of others in the county not necessarily making that move right away. And it turns out it was the right decision. And so we've taken that faith that you showed in us, and we've taken that very seriously. And so we have been meeting, as Ryan said, as Kim mentioned, quite aggressively and over the last several days. And so with that, I wanted to provide you, the board, with a roadmap of how we're thinking about all the nuances and all the details that we can think of going forward. And so we met this morning with Rob Lewin and Garrett Olson in cabinet for quite some time, and we came up with defining our objectives for a roadmap moving forward. The document that is on your agenda is actually something we just got completed this afternoon.
Okay.
And I wanted to show it to you so you could see our thinking. And I'd like to go through, not this whole document with you, of course, but simply a few of the pages. So if you could go, Mandy, and pull up the document to page 8. And this in all your spare time of isolation, you could really absorb all of this. But I do wanted you to see, I did want you to see the level of detail that we're showing.
Okay, I just was going to ask if they could look at it on their screens because I can't see anybody.
Well, and what I was going to ask, since this is going to be like 5 pages of this, okay. If it's okay with you, what I'd like to do is go through the objectives with a few examples of the activities, and I'll go just through the objectives, referencing some of the activities, and then if you write your questions down, then we can come back to you.
And I appreciate just do me a favor. Pages are not numbered, so if you could read the header on the page, just anything, that'll give me an indication of what page you're actually talking about.
Yes. This one says current objectives.
So it says current objectives. It should say at the, if you scroll on there, it should say page 8 on the cursor above. Do you see Mandy's cursor? Otherwise, it'll say on the top, current objectives, and then it's a table, and it'll say objective A.
I can't see Mandy, so I'm going to be opening the document and following along.
Okay.
Just heads up every once in a while. It doesn't have to be too complicated. Thanks.
Okay. So if you could mark and group, just maintain some of your questions. And what I'll do is I'll go through just a few of these pages so you can see what our thinking is. And then I can gather your feedback after that. This is a lengthy document, but I'll just go through the primary objectives with you so you could see our thinking. And know that this is a work in progress. The floor keeps moving out from underneath me. And, I stepped out earlier just a moment ago. Dr. Brescia called, wanted to know if I had heard the governor's update this afternoon. And I told him that I had, briefly heard pieces of it, but the long and short of it is he insinuated that he believed that school will be out for the remainder of the year. And he believed that we should prepare as an organization for that eventuality. We're talking through the rest of the year. And so in addition to that, we should prepare for virtual and online learning, such as what we're doing here. And to my knowledge, we're the first district in our county to do this that we're doing now. What he also mentioned was that Monterey County was moving towards a shelter in place, except for essential emergency workers. Likely we can expect a similar trend in our county in the days to come. But I wanted you to know that we've worked with all of our administrators at all of our sites to help define what that would look like in a virtual setting so that we maintain our movement, we maintain our information flows, and I think we're in a really good place. As you can see, we're giving daily updates to our parent community and our staff community. Kristen is working closely with our unions. We've had a demand to bargain from CSEA as well as SLCTA, for which we are doing a virtual negotiation tomorrow for CSEA. I will bring you up to speed on what those elements are. Additionally, on Thursday, we are going to have an initial negotiations. Mike Smith will join with SLCTA remotely on Thursday. And, of course, I will keep you informed as to what that looks like. You can bet that there will be some conversation about workload and expectations of teachers while on this remote platform. So given that, knowing that tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, my staff and I will be on a virtual conference call with State Superintendent Tony Thurman, and he's going to talk to us about the implications of the governor's new guidelines. I think we're well ahead of the game. I think we're going to be in a great spot. But I want to go through this with you. In addition, Jan Tomsky has been working closely with Diane Frost because therein lies much of our vulnerability when we start doing this with regard to our most vulnerable special needs populations. So I want you to know we're on it. We're looking at this very progressively and proactively. And if I could, I will go through these objectives with you. And if you could bear with me, write your questions down, and then we'll come back and you can field them. So the current objective, Objective A, provide for the safety and protection of faculty and staff. And to that end, there are 7 action steps that we came up with. And, for example, continue to implement widespread decontamination, reduce workspace exposure, which we have. We're clearly articulating social distancing, flex schedules, and remote learning beginning immediately. And we've established proper hygiene with signage, guidance for safe hygiene practices, as well as trying to determine and properly address our employees who have children who are at home, but still need to care for their children who are now at home. How can they do this remotely? So we've been working very closely with that. And protocols to develop when people do gather for whatever reason, that we have a hygiene screening or a basically a questionnaire that says, are you feeling well? And move forward with that. The second objective, which is B on the second page, which is provide for the health and well-being of all students. Obviously, this is our mission. And the activities and areas that we will focus on is develop plans sensitive to unique communication and special needs of students. So we had talked about that, as well as our non-English proficient students and families who are really impacted by this. Set up procedures for all teachers to contact all students on a regular basis. We've been active in that discussion. I'm so proud of our teachers. They've just been really amazing, as well as our site administrators. For students previously known or requesting additional support, establish a resource referral option for teachers. So this is going to be a really important piece with Diane Frost working with our counselors and our MFTs to try and reach out for kids who are really taking the hit for this when they're at home in maybe not so supportive environments. Also, we have developing a tiered method for following up on students who are calling out for help. And so we're defining what that could look like. As you know from working with watching the news and listening to Aaron Primer's work, we're going to ensure that our nutritional needs, so kids aren't going to go hungry on our watch. We talked about the emotional supports for students and then trying to make sure that we're communicating through that. C, Objective C, provide for the educational development of all students. This is important, trying to find that sweet spot of accountability so kids know what's expected of them. You have to imagine our high school seniors, juniors who are college bound and really need those grades and those Carnegie units and working to expect, you know, anticipate those things. So we're going to work really hard on making sure they get what they need. We're going to develop plans sensitive to the special needs populations, and we're going to work with Jan Tomsky on that, as well as Rick Mayfield and John Addis on our non-English proficient students. We're going to really identify a minimum instructional requirement for each level of instruction, and we're working closely with our teachers and our administrators on that. We're going to try to define learning metrics to assess whether what we're doing is actually working for kids, and I will get back to you on that. Solicited educational-based questions from students and families. Develop a list of frequently asked questions. Convene a team to begin planning for high school graduation. Imagine those kiddos, 2.5 months from graduation. has worked so hard, and now what are we going to do? So we're going to start developing creative ways to celebrate and honor that, that ritual. And then develop a plan for how new to this district students will be managed during the school year, and identify and convene a team to begin forecasting adjustments and actions regarding summer activities and possible adjustments to the start of the new year. So lots and lots of communication. D, develop communication plans. As I mentioned, and as you've seen, we're currently doing a daily family and staff communication that we're expecting to be fluid. We're expecting the ground to continue moving on us and parents to have this need for information, and as well as our staff and our employees. So you can see from the last 2 days what we're holding ourselves accountable for. I'm trying really hard to control that message of optimism and a calm and measured approach. That I think our families and our students rely on that, as well as our staff. We're working openly with our unions to ensure that we're on the same page as best as possible. Because we need to do this together, and we don't need animosity and angst along the way. I plan to provide weekly updates, including you, of course, in those daily communications. But on the weekly basis, we'll continue the Friday updates and keep you abreast of what's happening. We do not have a regular scheduled board meeting until April 14th, unless an emergency occurs and we feel the need to have an additional meeting. So between now and April 14th, you can expect weekly updates from me and my team to drill a little deeper into what you're seeing from the family and the staff updates. We will create a unique website for COVID-19 so parents can, and we'll regularly update it so that parents can get that information and get those resources. It'll be in English and Spanish. And there is something called the JIC, or the Joint Information Center at the county. And we plan on making sure that we coordinate with them to make sure the regular information, the most relevant information about our district is updated. E, decontaminate all facilities according to CDC protocols. Just our staff, our Chris Bonin and Ryan, the group has been phenomenal in jumping on this, making sure our facilities are disinfected and kept to a high standard of cleanliness so that we don't get sick if we go through that upon return. F, manage and maintain human resource services, including labor relations, pay and leave issues, benefits. This is something that we continue to monitor. And I'm so impressed with Ryan and his team working with the fiscal department and the county office of ed to make sure that people get their paychecks on time, that they don't need that level of stress in addition to all the other things. And so Chris did a really good job as well bringing her department up to speed on this so that any of those questions that come up can be addressed accordingly. G, develop a donations management plan for the district. Basically, when you have people that call and say, how can I help? Well, this is one of those things that we're going to look at and really figure out what agencies out there that can really help. Prado Day Center, the food bank, United Way. We have so many great nonprofits that are out there that can assist. Los Osos Cares is another one. And if people would like to donate to those particular groups, that we can facilitate that communication. As well as volunteer assistance. We had Ellen Sheffer delivering meals today to needy families. And I just think, it's one of those things that I know a number of other board members have reached out and offered their support as well. As of now, I think we got this, but just know we're thinking about these things. H, identify San Luis Coastal's primary missions and develop referral lists for all essential needs outside of the mission. So in other words, we don't want to try to be something we're not. We want to maximize focus on what we're really designed to be about, which is educating our kids, supporting our families, and communication in this environment is absolutely mandatory. And so we're going to focus very heavily in that area. I identify responsibilities of district operating center. So in other words, from my office, which is the district's operating center, is, this is where we are leading. We're leaning into the message. We're controlling or at least influencing the narrative every day. And we're trying to really show that we are in not just control, but we're aware that that the floor is moving and that it's information is moving so quickly. We have to be nimble and responsive and develop those key partnerships. So these are the things. Tomorrow we're going to be identifying essential and non-essential workers and communicate as best that we can. But I can assure you my team from my office is working every day to make sure that we clarify these things. Jay, maintain campus security. This is important and it's oftentimes overlooked. If we go dark and we're all remote and we're in lockdown, that doesn't mean our campuses are secure. In fact, they're vulnerable to people that would come onto campus who are desperate and they needed shelter or they needed resources. And so we need to protect our assets. And I just want to make sure that we minimize any unnecessary vandalism and redirect people who are desperate to resources that can help them. K, ensure all students' families are connected to the internet. Kudos to Jeremy and kudos to the school board. 4 or 5 years ago, we made this a district priority to make sure that we connect all of our families to not just devices, but also to MiFi devices, to the internet, because we knew we were moving into a platform that had two distinct differences, one in the classroom and the other virtual. So that effort, going back 5 years, has allowed us to build an infrastructure, and Kim McGrath has done a phenomenal job setting up that infrastructure beautifully. And so now, due to all those efforts, we are now really highlighting the kids and the families that need that help. And we're finding that that now families are reaching out and saying, you know what, we do need that MiFi device and we do need an extra device because of X, Y, and Z. And so this is the time that we're reaching out and making sure people are connected. The name of the game is connection and communication. And without that, those families are in big trouble. And so we're going to work really hard to make sure we're actively figuring out who has that device, who has those the connection to the internet. And I remember Mark Buckman asking these questions in very detailed form, as well as I believe Mrs. Roger. And we have now really narrowed that down to a much smaller number than ever before. So we're going to be all over that. And then finally, L, implement financial tracking practices to maximize reimbursement and assemble team to forecast future financial impact. So making sure we have the resources for this emergency, make sure we keep a close record of what these things cost as we go along. And then really, just like if we experienced an earthquake and you lived on the coastal region and you looked out and you saw the ocean half a mile off the coast and you think to yourself, huh, what's coming at us next? Well, I think it is our responsibility to begin anticipating that tsunami, and it's an economic tsunami that's about to hit us, but it may not hit us for a while. But we have to expect and anticipate great challenges in our future with regard to this. So we want to have our eyes wide open. And Ryan and myself and Kim will start really looking at that and taking a sober and honest look at what that those implications could be and how we can approach that very very practically in the weeks, months, and year to come. So that is my my presentation on this document. That's our roadmap moving forward. Questions?
Okay, this time I'm going to go through the list again. only backwards. We'll mix it up. Ms. Roger, any questions? You need to unmute. You need to unmute, Nolan. You are not unmuted. Okay.
This is the tough part with the
iPad.
Okay. Okay, so I don't have any questions at this point. I'd like to hear what my colleagues have to say.
Okay, Mr. Millar. Mr. Millar, you need to unmute.
Could you give me a second? No questions.
Thank you very much. Dr. Isabeth Roger. You need to unmute.
Mute me, but I don't know how to unmute. You're unmuted. Okay, great. So this is in regard to graduation, since it's the closest tsunami wave that we're going to have to, that's going to hit us. And I wonder if we should perhaps consider small batch graduations. So the idea being that we have smaller groups, and I don't know how we group them. At some colleges, they group them by houses. I don't, you know, we would have to, like, majors perhaps, but something to think about in terms of having, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, we could also combine that with people being able to view the batches as they're graduating so that we're not having a large group of people in the same place at the same time. That was one thing that came to mind, because this is obviously something, you know, that's going to be a huge disruption for these kids. They had an imagine, you know, as you said, Dr. Prater, they imagined this day, and now it's going to be slightly different, but perhaps uniquely better.
Did you want to respond?
Yeah, I can respond just that, Rick and Kyle and Leslie, are starting to discuss creative ways to, you know, possibly say, what could this look like? As seniors, have waited for a lot of these moments that might look really different. And, they'll spend some time being creative and innovative and thinking about what could that look like. So just wanted you to know that's on our radar, and they're going to start brainstorming that.
But with the overriding objective being to reduce the numbers of people in any one place at any one time?
I guess it's hard to predict what kind of orders we might be under by then. So whether it's, online, whether it's in person, we'll have to see kind of where we are. But they will consider and be creative about solutions.
Thank you.
Ms. Frank. Do you have any questions? You need to unmute. You're muted. We can't hear you.
Oh, you're muted. Okay.
Okay, there you go. You're good.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank the team for an excellent job, because it's just, you know, an amazing, it's a great presentation, a lot of details. And it's hard, you know, to ask some questions. When you were talking, Eric, a couple of thoughts. I don't expect answers. Because, you know, you're doing so much right now. One of the things that did occur to me as we move down this road and, you know, we have, common curriculum, when it goes to, you know, online, is it, you know, what does that look like? I've seen so much, you know, teachers are, you know, posting this and posting that, but is there, will there be recommendation for what it looks like, you know, for third grade, these are the resources, or, and this is what it looks like for fifth grade, or are sites, you know, doing it by grade level? You know, I guess that would be one question. I don't have to answer that, but I'm just, you know, is that there a, you know, we have common curriculum. What does that common curriculum look like, you know, online? And that would go through elementary all the way to high school, I guess. And then, secondly is, the outreach and the communication is such a tremendous and important part that, our district is doing, and I think it's doing a great job. The question I would have is, what is the feedback loop look like for our, you know, at-risk you know, families, that they are, you know, and I think you kind of mentioned, you know, contact or, you know, it, clearly it's going to look differently and differentiated. And then lastly, I was wondering, is there a way, since we have this already in place for some sites, to push out, and maybe we don't have it anymore, is Rosetta Stone for our EL families in a much more broad way, so that they can continue kind of almost with a structured English format? I'm just throwing that out there. So anyway, thank you for the great job. It's amazing. So that's it.
Those are all good points. I've written them down. I will talk about them in cabinet. Thank you.
Mr.
Buckman.
Hi, thank you. This is great, and I'm really glad to see this report from Resolute. I haven't had a chance to review it yet because I think you just finished it. So a question I have is, school sites become, now that there's been a state of emergency, we become emergency shelters and whatever else the state needs us to do with our school sites. Is there something in this plan that talks about what we do with our programs if the state comes in and takes over the school sites? And that might be something we want to think about. I don't know if it's in the report or not.
Mark, that's a really good question. Since we're going virtual, and I'm requesting our staffs to go virtual too, so that we minimize the spread, I think that that will likely have a minimal impact on what we're doing. I think we set this up correctly. However, we have had outreach by the Y, Slo County Y. They want to, they're partnering with first responders across the county to provide first responder childcare services.
Good.
They wanted to use our sites, not just our sites, but sites across the county.
Yes.
And, they're still in the discussion phase right now, and I will update the board as I learn more.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I just want to comment. So I made specific attempts to talk to parents with one, two or more children, and two of the spouses working. I thought I might get a lot of negative, and it was all positive, and I felt really good about that, and I just want to thank staff as well for being way on top of this.
Thank you.
And I have a question, and that is, I know that our facilities are often used by other organizations. Are any of them still currently using our facilities other than school?
So in terms of our current school sites, the answer would be no. So we've canceled all facility use at all of our sites at this time until further notice. Now, we have not canceled our renters at Sunnyside, Morrowell, and those areas. So those, they're still up to them whether they close or not, right? It doesn't really affect our students, our kids. So our current facilities, yes, shut down to community use at this time, but not our rental sites. Okay,
thank you. All right, then, not seeing any hands up, we will move on to item 8.02, certification to the Board of Education for temporary athletic coaches for the 2019-20 spring sports season, whatever that may look like.
Right.
Video can go back on if you can.
Kim, do you want to take this?
Kristen, are you still on?
Yes, I am here.
Oh, okay.
Good, Kristen.
Ta-da.
And the question, can you reiterate it?
So we're discussing item 8.02, the certification of temporary athletic coaches for the 2019-20 spring sports season.
Yes, so I know that this is seems a little odd because we have suspended our spring sports at this point in time. It looks like they may be suspended for the majority of the year. However, However, we thought we'd just get it approved in case we end up having our sports back.
Are there any questions from the board on this topic? If not, this is an action item, so we need a motion and a second.
So I'll make a motion, but I do have one question if I can. And look, these are all non-walk-on coaches?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I'll move to accept this item as presented.
I'll second. We have, if anyone wants to second, you need to unmute. I'll second at this time. We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by me. All in favor? You're all muted. Raise your hand, wave, indicate.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? All right. Ms. Dawson, do you have that?
We can't hear. I do.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you. Next, item 8.03, Measure D, Design Build Modification Number 7.
So this is the bid for the south side portion of the 100 building, which is the science wing. So a little bit more expensive, right, in terms of the gas and, cabinetry and kind of setup for the science wing. So the good news is Ron Holcomb attended the bid. Bid opening was there, throughout, saw all the bids. And we actually met with Acme last week and went through line by line every single aspect of the bid and allowances. It truly paid off for us to have gone and done the demo and then had the bidders come in and see the demoed area. So we really do feel like that helped bring the bids down. That's something we plan on doing. We're currently doing it at the B building at Morro Bay, and we'll do it in the center of the 100 building as we move forward for that bid. The good news was this came in at kind of our estimated amount in terms of we have $29 million set aside or kind of budgeted for, or expectation, I should say, projection for budgeted for the 100 building. And so this was, that portion is right about what we thought it would be in terms of the number there. I do think that there are some areas that we can still save money. We do have a few unknowns that we put in as allowances. And so as we proceed, if those are things that we don't need to end up doing, such as the sewer line and how deep it needs to go and are we going to hip rock. So we have put a few allowances in. That one in particular was kind of a bigger number. So we'll see as we proceed. But this kind of came in, again, as expected, which actually was a positive thing, that it didn't come in at $10, $11 million, something higher. So we were pleased at where it was at. So I'll take any questions that any board members have. And our hope is that we can, begin this construction as soon as possible.
Any questions? Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. Ryan, if we go down towards the bottom, and I'm really glad about the demolition. If we go down towards the bottom where there's single digits and starts with one, and if we go, it's six, is dry rot repair?
Yep.
Okay, so if we've already torn the building down and there's budgeted $75,000 for dry rot repair, I'm confused.
So it's a great question. We actually, there's still some demo left to do on the building. So what we haven't done is we haven't taken the roof off yet.
Okay.
So we can do as much demo on the inside as possible, get rid of the asbestos abatement, those types of things, but there still is more demo, so I should have been a little bit clearer on that. So they're assuming that there might be some dry rot repair when they redo the roof aspect of the building.
Okay, great. And then item 15, this is more just general curiosity, but can you tell me what wall graphics are for $40,000?
Why that's allowance is because we don't know for sure if we're going to do it or not, but there are some kind of poster size stickers that the architects again like to design and make it look good. So this is one that I was not ready to approve at this point to have, and why I told them to make it an allowance at this point, and we'll see what moving forward what that looks like.
All right, appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'll move to approve if you'd like a motion.
I would like a motion.
I would like
to second it. Unmute, please. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll move resolution to modification 7 to St. Louis High build contract.
Second.
Okay. It's not a resolution.
No, it is. Yeah.
But you got it. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Motion.
Thank you.
Motion carries. All right, we are moving on to the action consent portion of our program. Wave or unmute or say something if you want something cool. 9.01, approval of 2021 instructional calendar. That was Walt?
Yes.
Thank you. 9.02, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.04, proposed revisions to board policy 3230, federal grant funds, second reading. 9.05, proposed revisions to board policy 3250, transportation fees, second reading. 9.06, proposed revisions to board policy 3514, environmental safety, second reading. All right, I would like a motion, please, to approve items 9.02 through 9.06.
So moved.
And I'll second.
I have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? No. Mr. Millar, 9.01.
Well, I pulled it because I'm not sure. I mean, do we have to pass it right now? I don't think we have any clue what next year's instructional calendar is going to look like, much less when it's going to begin. But, you know, there's, you know, I guess we could have it in place and see what happens. But anyway, it just struck me as odd that we'd be voting on this tonight.
I guess with that, we voted on it once and there was an error in it, isn't that? That's my understanding.
But it could change.
Well, okay. All right. I'll move approval of 9.01.
Could I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm just wondering in whether the, you know, the mistake was made, but what I was wondering, and I talked with Kristen about this, is that at one point, years ago, Marilyn, you may remember this, Walt, the district had to implement rain days because Los Osos got flooded, and so the Los Osos schools were closed. And so at the end of the year, there was, you know, what they called rain days because some schools were closed, and there was this whole kind of issue with staff. So I'm wondering, sort of like back east, that in future calendars, do we need, you know, days that, you know, for, you know, not that it would be 3 weeks, but, you know, a week of kind of like a other event, whether it's, you know, a freak, you know, climate change event or something that, you know, we might consider in future calendars to add those. And I don't know what you would call them because we don't have snow here yet, but it's just a thought.
Yeah, My thought on this is, you're right. It is odd that we're approving this tonight, given the circumstances. You're absolutely correct. I do consider this a formality and a placeholder, because things are changing so rapidly and people understand that. And to Evelyn's point, I do not at this point anticipate the state of California taking these lost days and making us redo them. And in the declaration that the governor and the legislature just made, it appears that they're going to fully compensate schools, i.e. employees, for these days leading to summer. So it appears. So it doesn't look as though we're going to have that obligation. However, we have received a demand to bargain from SLCTA, which I'll learn more about on Thursday. And depending on how hard they push, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, what's hard in this environment and it's related to calendar, is what we're doing is we're trying to keep things seamless as possible with student learning.
Right.
Now we're just doing it virtually, much like we're modeling here. We're holding board business, the business of this board, in public, virtually. Now, what makes this difficult is a number of school districts up and down the state aren't nearly as together as we are, and they're saying to their teachers, go home. Well, the problem with that is the governor's tomorrow is going to tell us we have an obligation to educate them. So I give kudos to you, the board, for having the foresight to develop the infrastructure of this learning platform that we have now put in place. So it's relatively brilliant that this is going to work. Our teachers will continue to teach, although in a different way. I'm going to push back on our union to ensure that they see it that way so that we don't have to pay the piper in June into July if they choose not to work. I don't see it going that way, but the long arm of the CTA is influencing that discussion. So my hope is that our relationship with our union groups, our teacher union in particular, is a positive one, a strong one. And I think you can see from our narrative in our regular updates that we're seeing this as a collaboration, not as something that we want to do this on. And I envision this working out well for us, to answer your question, so that we don't have to have a rainy day or a COVID makeup in the summer.
Okay.
So I'll second the motion.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Buckman, to approve the revision to the 2020-2021 instructional calendar, item 9.01. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries. Let's see. Moving on to advance agenda. Any advance agenda items? Then reports by board members. Anyone?
I'll just real quickly, if I can. I was able to attend the Tri-County Education Coalition. We had superintendents. We had site leaders, AXA, both the associations. It was conducted by Capital Advisors. We were putting together our platform to take to the state legislature the day after the May revise, and then we voted later to just cancel the whole trip. And now today, I guess the state capitol has been closed down. So that was very interesting. I think that's all I'd like to take everybody's time with, but it's all looking good out there. Thanks.
Thank you. And I would just like to say that I attended briefly Mr. O'Connor's in service yesterday at San Luis Obispo High School and was very impressed both by him and the way the room was set up. Social distancing was very well handled. And the teacher's response to what they're experiencing, their resiliency and flexibility that they indicated, as well as who wouldn't feel a little fear, a little nervousness. They want to do a really good job. Some of them felt prepared. Others are concerned about their ability to have the tools that they need. But everyone, it was very impressive. And then I spoke with John Calandro today and over at Laguna Middle School, and, you know, people were feeling good. Don Mercucci stopped by to talk about how he's going to be making a video and what that'll look like. So it's, people are really stepping up here. So, and I also wanted to say that I very much appreciate the daily update. It's huge to have an opportunity to see what's going on. It really helps. So that's it. Anything else? Anybody?
No.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll adjourn this
meeting. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. Thank you.